are listening to The Motherhood Experience, a podcast where you are part of the conversation with moms, for moms, and by moms. Let's jump into this episode with me, your host, Val Kleppen. Happy Tuesday, friends. Welcome back to another episode of The Motherhood Experience. So glad to have you joining me today. What a fantastic episode you're in for. My friend Nikki England and I met back around 2012-ish and have just been friends and in relationship ever since, have so many great stories. We could have talked for so much longer, but for episode's sake, we decided to stop where we did. I hope that you are encouraged by Nikki's story, by her transparency and everything she shared having to do with her motherhood journey. And for real, if you would like her to speak at an upcoming women's event, I'm going to plug her. Been to the events that she has spoken at. She's wonderful. I've got her contact information. I can hook you up. Without further ado, here is my motherhood experience conversation with friend Nikki England. Well, I am so thrilled to have my friend Nikki England here for the Motherhood Experience podcast today. Nikki, how are you?
I am good. I'm really good. I'm actually really excited to be here, Val.
And it's so good. We have taken a while to connect to do this, so I'm glad it finally happened. And you know...
Phone me. Val sends message. Nikki doesn't respond.
It was a patient process. A patient pursuit. That's what it was.
That's you. You're very patient.
So I would like for you to tell everybody about your 500 kids and the ages and stages of everybody.
Love to. Happy to. So my oldest, a boy, 20, he goes to Grand Canyon University. So he's in his second year. I have my number two, who is also a boy, a junior, and he is 17. My number three, a boy, 15, ninth grader. I have a girl, a 13-year-old, seventh grader, and then bringing up the rear is my youngest, who is 11, and a sixth grader. So here we go. Carter, Caden, Connor, Kylie, Camden. And no, we did not intentionally start out to have them all be that way, but then we caved.
Really? All my kids have H names. Mm-hmm. My sister and I are both V names. I think a lot of parents, probably more than we realize, do the repeating consonant.
I do see that. We didn't intentionally do it. We got trapped.
Okay, tell me how that happened then, because how could that not be intentional?
So we had Carter and Caden, and then Connor came along. And when we had Connor, I was like, and again, we didn't set out to do, well, hey, we're going to have five children one day. It was every kid. I was like, I don't know. This could be it. All right. So it just started. Right. And then Connor came along and I was like, well, this really could be, it could just be three boys and it's going to be like Carter, you know, Caden and Adam. And then Adam's going to feel left out because he could have been part of the pack. And then I'm looking, so true story. I was like, we can't do that to him. And we might only have three boys. So let's just name him Connor. And I love the name anyway. So we went, yep, that's great. And then we legitimately were almost done. Connor was by far my busiest child. Then we decided to have another one and we had Kylie. And then when she was born, we named her Madison because we were done. We weren't doing it. We're all done with C's. This is it. We had a girl. We can break the mold. So we named her Madison for 20 minutes in the hospital. And I was just perfect because Carter was supposed to be Maddie and it's going to be so great. So we're like, Madison, I love this. And then I looked at her, if only I would do that. And I was like, she'll look like a Maddie. I don't know what a Maddie looks like, but it is not my girl. And Chad's like, yeah, I think you're right. She doesn't look like a Maddie. And my doctor who delivered, at that point, three out of the four came in and I was like, look, it's not going to be Madison. We can't name her Maddie. She would, with no hesitation, goes, oh my goodness, thank you. I just was like, how could you name her that? It doesn't fit your family. And I was like, whoa, I have not been, there's no other name picked out. You said that out loud. And then I was like, well, she agrees with me. So I said, okay, well, then we're going to name her Kylie. My doctor's like, that just fits your family. It's perfect. I don't know. I mean, at this point, clearly she delivered three kids. So we were BFFs.
Right.
So she obviously knew me better than I knew me. And that is how we got locked in. So then I made it a K instead of a C because that's so different. And I felt better.
Right.
And that's the story of it all.
Oh, and so when she was a baby is when you moved to Fargo.
Yes.
And but we did not. We were just talking, trying to figure out piece of puzzle together about how we did not really start talking until a year and a half.
Yeah,
maybe after you moved there. And so so tell me then, let's recap about your youngest son's birth and everything that you experienced then after you had moved to Fargo and had him.
Yeah, so we had Cam in 2012. So we moved to Fargo 2011, had Cam in summer of 2011, had Cam spring of 2012. Actually, I went back to where we lived in Minnesota to deliver him so I could be with my doctor. Mainly so she could approve the name. No.
Right.
And he had a pretty traumatic birth in general. With Cam, it's kind of how I knew I was done. I mean, I would have had 10 kids if I could have. I love babies. But my blood pressure dropped. I almost coded. I had like 20 people in my room. When he was delivered, I ended up having an epidural, which I said I would never do after the very traumatic birth of my first son. And because they messed up my induction and I labored all day and I live with chronic pain, it was so bad that I said I can only deal with one pain, and I clearly can't turn my headaches off. So I'm going to have I don't have a choice at this point to be able to deliver. So they gave me an epidural, and it was totally of the Lord, because when Cam was born, he had the cord wrapped around so many times that my doctor said, with how fast your babies would come out, and because you would do it with no drugs, like there was no stopping them. And she just said, I never would have been able to get the cord from around his neck. She just said, and here you had more control. Like you could stop, we could stop you, and I could unwrap him. So then he was delivered, and I, thank goodness, sent him to the nursery actually that night, and the nurses found him and he was blue. That was probably the first, we didn't know, sign that there was something very wrong, but we didn't know that. They came in, hey, he was blue. We got him breathing and stabilized. This happened, you know, while you were sleeping. And it was good because I was such a hard sleeper. And he didn't make a noise. They actually just checked on him and he was blue.
Wow.
And they said it was fluke. He just had amniotic fluid. He's fine. You can take him home. Everything will be fine. And then we were home 1 week. And I was such a hard sleeper. You know, they always tell you, you're like, don't worry, you'll wake up when your baby's. No, that is not true for all of us. I mean, a tornado could rip through the house and I would sleep through it. Like, I'd be like, Nikki, the baby is by your head and you can't even hear this thing. I couldn't. Like, I was just such a hard sleeper. It was a gift. But I had nursed Cam. I laid him down. I went to sleep. And I always just say the Lord woke me up. And I woke up and I just felt check Cam, and I didn't wake up. Like, I just can't stress this enough. I never woke up. I was such a hard sleeper. Didn't wake up during the night. And I reached in and put my hand next to him, and he was stiff as a board. And I heard these sounds, and I grabbed him and yelled for Chad, turn on the light. And his lips were already blue. He wasn't moving. And I was like, he's not breathing. And I grabbed him, and my parents were still there because my mom would come and stay. And I ran into my parents' room and said, Cam's not breathing. And we ran downstairs, Chad called 911, also totally of the Lord. We had never done infant CPR. And Chad, a week before Cam was born, had to redo his whole CPR certification. And when he was there, he said, hey, he went up to the instructor and said, this is really weird, but I don't know how to do infant CPR. Would you mind showing me? I'm about to have my fifth baby. I just feel like I should learn that. And the instructor showed him. And then this happened and we were downstairs and he's on the phone with 911 and I'm holding Cam and his lips are still blue and he's stiff as a board. And as you can imagine, right, 1 week postpartum, your hormones just plummet.
Right.
And I am a wreck. I'm a wreck at this point. And my mom came down and Chad was outside on the phone. And I remember I looked at Cam and I handed him to my mom and I just said, I can't watch my baby die. And I walked outside and Chad was on the phone and I was like, you give me that phone right now. You are the only one that knows infant CPR, and you get in there and you give him CPR until they get here and I'll talk to them. Which I took the phone, and then my dad, my sweet dad, he took the phone from me and he talked to, you know, dispatch. Wow. Chad went in and started CPR and CAM, and then they arrived, and then they told me that he ended up coding four more times. And I have to tell you, there's something about seeing this massive group of adults standing around this tiny little baby. Mm-hmm. That, and I, it was the first time I'll never forget. I was on a stretcher and I was holding Camden, and they were, you know, I rode in the ambulance and they took me past a mirror in this. I just, the trauma, it just sticks out to me. I was unrecognizable. Mm. Like, I was so swollen because I had been sobbing so hard, and yet, and I always just say, but God,
yeah,
like to look back and see how he had gone before and how he had provided. And we ended up going to Children's to find out Cam had sleep apnea and severe reflux. And he would sleep with a monitor on that would go off if he would stop breathing. He slept mm-hmm. in a slanted crib in a sling, which, what a blessing, whoever invented that. So the reflux wouldn't come up and get stuck. And he had to do that for, I want to say, till he was 8 months old, at least. They just said, you're up against time. Like, the closer he gets to a year, the safer you are. And I had to adjust my diet. I really wanted to, you know, breastfeed as long as I could. So yeah. They just said, if that's what you want to do, here's the foods you can eat, which was like chicken and rice. I was committed to the cause. So that's all I ate essentially for months, is because everything was just, could just make the reflux that much worse. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So, whoa, first of all, and praise God, actually praise God, first of all.
Amen.
And then, whoa. So I'm going to hit pause there and back up a little bit, because I had forgotten about this until you mentioned it. But before we get to what I forgot about, when you and Chad were married, You come from a family that's like, everything is family, family first, everything together, all of that. So did you always know that motherhood was going to be in your cards, like no matter what it looked like, birth, adoption? You knew that you were going to be a mom.
I knew I was going to be a mom, to the point that when Chad and I were dating, I told him, look, no matter what, I want to be a mom. Like, I know that this is what God has called me to. No matter how it happens, whether I can have them, whether I can't, it doesn't matter to me. But I also want to be home with them as much as I can, especially while they are tiny humans. And that is a major priority, but it's also a major sacrifice. Mm. And I just was very honest of, you need to know that. Like, if you want to be in a relationship with me, like, it's a big ask, but it is something I feel called to and I can't compromise on. So we had that conversation really, really early on in our dating relationship.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he was on board, obviously.
Yeah. And I mean, keep in mind, I was, you know, 16 when this conversation happened. So.
Okay. What? 16? You guys have been together that long?
Yeah, I was 16. He was 20 when we started dating. Which,
whoa, whoa, there's lots of woes here already. We're 10 minutes in.
I mean, we were in youth ministry for 16 years, and I would tell students, like, hey, you know what? God is in that, but I am not a proponent. All right. So if that's what God has for you, you'll still be there on high school, friends.
Right. You should say, I was the exception to the rule. The exception to the rule.
Exception.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah. Where was I going? Because you, wow. Oh, I remember now. Okay. So when you were 16, you were like, hey, I want to be mom, just so you know, Mr. 20 year old.
How? I would have been like, I'm out. Especially because he came from a very, very, very different background than me.
Yeah.
So I knew that that would be very shocking. That being said, one of the things that drew Chad to me was my family. Just, he really, really respected my parents and their marriage and how our family interacted and we were raised. And so it wasn't completely terrifying, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you get married when you're like, how old were you then?
I was just shy of 20.
Okay. I thought you were going to say it was the day after my 18th birthday.
Oh, I mean.
Okay. okay, so just shy of 20. That's okay. I got my breath back.
You're like, we're a whole nother end.
And then, and then it was not long before you had your first son, right?
Yeah, so we were on the 5-year plan, if you know anything. My husband is just like, so we were on the 5-year plan, no kids for 5 years. This is what we're doing. And 3 months into being married, I was pregnant with her.
Right. Okay. And so that you mentioned the traumatic delivery.
Yeah.
And there, you also mentioned chronic pain, which I know stemmed from that. So walk me through what happened there.
Yeah. So the birth of our oldest, I labored a really long time, which is not uncommon when it's your first baby. I was induced with all but one of my kids just because of the way my body didn't work, I suppose. And I labored a really, really long time, too far. They started the Pitocin. It kept going. I had a birth plan. And in my birth plan, it kind of just laid out, like, here's what I'm willing to do, here's what I'm not willing to do, et cetera, and so forth. One of the things that I was not willing was to let a student be in the room or be a part of it. And I just said, I know they need to learn, but it's my first baby, so maybe go learn on the mom who's having her, you know, second or third or fourth baby. It's not me.
Yeah.
It's just where I kind of had landed. So I had decided, actually, the hospital I was at the time, I mean, because 20 years ago, they didn't even do epidurals. They only did spinals. So I decided to get a block, which, if you know, they only last for a couple hours or whatever. And when I had requested it, they sent for the anesthesiologist. The anesthesiologist came up and brought a student and came to the door. The nurse met them at the door, and they actually were delayed because they couldn't find the room. And the reason they couldn't find the room is they just said, most moms you can hear. True story. And they said she wasn't making any noise, which made her perfect for a student. So they got to the room and the nurse goes, well, that's great, but she actually did a birth plan and she has requested no students. And they pushed past her. And then they met, then Chad was there and he's like, you know, we're fine with you, the anesthesiologist, but you know, we'd rather him not do it. And they ignored him. I didn't sign any papers, which you're supposed to. And then they did the spinal. And when they did the spinal, he messed up. And the reason he messed up, when they explained to me later, is because, I just preface it, I was huge. I was huge. Like, Carter was 9'2", 22 inches, and they said it was the largest placenta they have ever seen.
Okay.
True story. So I was massive. I mean, it was like to the point that the nurse, when I gave birth, was like, that was all baby. Like, but because of that, I didn't have a lot of back fat, I guess. And usually there's more back fat. And the student misjudged because he didn't have to go through very much. Now, I want to preface this. This can happen to, you can be an anesthesiologist for 30 years and this can happen. So know that. I could have had the anesthesiologist do this and this still could have happened. So I do, disclaimer, but it's the way it happened. So he punctured my dura sac. I ended up getting a spinal leak and they didn't tell me. I gave birth. Then they came and then it wore off. I pushed for over 2 hours with nothing, you know, finally delivered Carter, delivered apparently a freakishly large placenta and to the point that they invited me to come in and see.
We need to get you a shirt or something that's like, I had a freakishly large placenta.
They were like inviting people in. I'm like, too far. First baby. Too far, friends.
Overachiever Nikki over here.
So, and actually, here's another fun fact. Carter's head was so large that nurses stopped by and they said, we have never had a baby in the hospital that has ever had a head as large as your son's. We had to see it for ourselves. Just right. Now, mind you.
Rude.
I was like, now my baby's a freak. And now, mind you, he is 6'7". Okay. He is a very large man. So I am not surprised he's been large from the day he was born and he never stopped. He's 6'7". So
yeah,
go figure. I was like, buddy, you needed a big head to fit that big body. So you're.
He grew into it. He grew he into did. It, everybody.
He did.
Settle down.
Yep, calm down. So anyway, they came in afterwards and said, hey, we're so sorry. The student punctured your dura sac. It's fine though, because you can just lay flat and then it heals and you're going to be good. And this happens and you'll be good. So I laid flat and I wasn't good. So then they gave me a blood patch. That's what they do. If it doesn't seal on its own, which it's supposed to, they give you a blood patch to help seal it. And I went home and I wasn't good and the headache wouldn't stop and it just kept getting worse. And then 4 blood patches later, I still wasn't good. And then no one could explain why it wasn't good. And that sent me on a 2-year journey of trying to get a diagnosis of what is wrong with me. And I was in and out of hospitals from really risky procedures, trying, you know, they were convinced that it was still open and it needed to close. And at that time, you know, 20 years ago, what we do with narcotics now is not what we did then. And that's how they manage pain. So their solution to me was like, hey, we'll just hop her up on pain meds until she figure it out, which is a horrible solution. So I then ended up just having a lot of allergic reactions and all these things. And then they couldn't figure that out. Why is she having breathing issues? And it turns out I was allergic to pain med that they kept me on and it wouldn't get me off. And it was really, really traumatic, truth be told. And I finally got a referral to Mayo. And when I went to Mayo, they, you know, went through the whole gamut of tests just to make sure, you know, along the way, they're like, we're convinced you have a brain tumor or we're convinced you have this. And I could barely take care of Carter. My mom practically had to move in with us. I was in so much pain all the time. I mean, you could hear me crying at night because it was just unbearable. I was in and out of the ER because I couldn't manage the pain. I couldn't get it to stop. And, you know, I'm nursing and I'm trying to care my baby, but I can't take care of my baby. And then I have all this mom guilt of like, I can't even take care of the baby that I have. So when I got to Mayo, you know, I'll be honest, I thought this is it. Like, this is the solution. The Lord is going to use this and I am going to be, they are the best of the best. They're going to fix me. Mm-hmm. And I, truth be told, I had all my eggs in that basket. I thought if I get to Mayo, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And I met with the most wonderful neurologist and they went through everything and they came back and said, what we think happened is when you had that spinal and it went awry and you had the leak, it, you know, took the spinal fluid from your brain. That's what happens. It drains out, right? Mm-hmm. And it set off a firestorm in your body. And it triggered what you probably had was a pre-existing condition you didn't know, but it triggered that, right? You were predisposed to, you know, someone who could have migraines. And this kind of unleashed the worst form. And they said, you know, you have what we call acute chronic migraines, which, by the way, isn't actually a diagnosis. It's just a description of symptoms.
Right.
And
right.
You are 2% of the nation that have this kind of migraine. It's why you couldn't get diagnosed. Most neurologists will never see anyone like you in their career. And the worst news that they gave me, and at this point I had tried every drug. I was, you know, before Botox was approved for headaches, I was the guinea pig that helped get it. But what would happen is I would start on a drug, my body would adjust and it would quit working. And then I lost my memory because of the drugs. And I just knew this isn't the life I wanted. I didn't want to live this life. I had no short-term memory at all. I could barely even finish a conversation because it would just be gone. And the drug wasn't working. They had to just keep upping it. And I went in and they just said, you are one of the very few people we can't help. And that doesn't happen very often, but you're it. And, you know, at this time, you know, Carter's 2, not even 2. And they said, here's the thing. You can't have any more kids. Be so grateful that you have one. Because if you have more babies, we won't be able to manage your pain. It's not safe to do what you're doing with babies and to be pregnant. Like, we can't give you any of that. So you need to just be done having children, and you have one, and that's such a blessing. And these are honestly the words that they're using. It's one of the reasons I love Mayo. They don't use medical terms. They use these very endearing, warm, but I'll be honest, I was devastated. I mean, I left there and I was like, Lord, like, you knew, like, and to just like feel that disappointment of like, I knew this is my life. I knew what I wanted. I knew. And to go, man, it was never supposed to be this way. Mm-hmm. And to wrestle through that, Val, to wrestle through everything that I've ever known about who God is, and to come face to face and say, no, you're still good. No, you're still sovereign. No, you do have a plan for me, and it's for my good and your glory. And to be able to land in that place. And I can still remember, was in bed, and I remember I sat up and I just couldn't wrestle anymore. I knew I was just gripping my right? Like I had a right to my health, which I don't. And I remember I sat up and I just said, Lord, I will gladly surrender this. I'll gladly surrender if the best you have for me is barely ever being able to get out of bed. If the best you have for me is that somehow I will take care of my one kiddo. If this is it, like, I trust you, but I need to have joy. Like, I need the first thing that people see in me is the joy in Christ. And joy isn't the absence of suffering. It's the presence of God.
Yes. Amen.
And that was my only prayer. Like, if, Lord, you would honor that, like, I don't need anything else. And honestly, Val, it is when everything changed. I had a friend at the time who suffered a traumatic brain injury in a car accident. And she was a teacher and she lost everything. I mean, it was so bad. And she started taking this supplement. And as you can imagine, you know, everybody was so helpful. They just, hey, why don't you try this? Have you ever tried that? You know, and I would always say, Lord, I will try anything because I don't know what you're going to use. But she came to me and she went back to teaching. And this is someone who like couldn't get out of bed. And she just said, Nikki, will you just try this? Will you try this supplement? And I was like, well, I will think about it. Promise. So I went home. Again, my mom's still with me. And I said, Lord, if this is what you have for me, if this is what's going to get me to be a functional human. And notice I never said healed, functional. I need the first 30 days paid for because I've spent so much on so many things. I just need to know if this is what you have for me. Well, I went to bed that night. My mom came in the next morning, way too early. And she said, Nikki, there's someone on the phone for you. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, it seems important. So I got on the phone and it was my friend. And she just said, Nikki, I'm so sorry that I called this early. But she said, the weirdest thing happened. And I just had to call you right away. She said, I had someone call me and say, I want Nikki to try this supplement. And we want to pay for the first 30 days. And I knew. Like, I go, Lord, you are so good and you are so faithful. Like, I knew that was going to be the game changer for me. And I got on this supplement. And mind you, you know, pain scales 1 to 10. I was almost always at a 10. And all I wanted to be it was at a 5. If I could get to a 5, praise God. And this supplement got me to a 5. And I would bounce between a 5 and a 10. And that's all I needed. Like, I knew I could deal. I just needed to be like somewhat functional and be able to have a conversation and not be hopped up on all the different migraine meds that they had because they just had such severe side effects for me. So that got me to be a functional human and to kind of start down the path of what is pain and what is suffering and what does that look like and what does that mean as a follower of Christ and how is that lived out?
Okay. Whoa is the word of the day. So and it's at, like, I've seen you, I've been with you. It's debilitating. And it's since 2021, I guess, is the first migraine I ever had. And then I've been having them, you know, periodically since the very first migraine I ever had. I thought of you immediately. And I was like, Lord, how can this be her life so much of the time? Mm-hmm. So I get it to a degree, but tell me then, you have the devastating news really of like no diagnosis is a devastating thing when you had all your eggs in that basket, you said. Yeah. You go through this emotional wrestling match with the Lord and in surrender, you find this relief, this miracle that is paid for the first 30 days. Mm-hmm. How do you go from that to, by the way, Mayo Clinic, here's four more kids.
You know, I think that was the sweetest medical appointment I've ever had. So I miscarried between Carter and Caden, which wasn't planned. And I was so sick. I wasn't surprised. I don't think I was even remotely healthy enough. I mean, it was just at that point. So even just listen, when Mayo told me that, I was like, well, I am not surprised that I probably won't even be physically able to carry another baby. And then Caden, my rainbow baby, came along, also not planned. And you would think we'd be over the top paranoid after Mayo told us that. Not paranoid. And I just was like, you know what, Lord, I trust you. And if I have to somehow suffer through this, I trust that you will deliver me.
Mm.
So when I got pregnant with him, and here's what is he's the only, it's the only pregnancy it happened with. It was almost like I didn't have a headache, and it was the only time it ever happened. It was the only reprieve I've gotten in 20 years where I went below a 5. I got to tell you, I thought I could take on the world.
Yeah.
I'm accomplished all the things. And I went back to Mayo and I shared this, and they said, well, oddly enough, it actually can happen that way. I was like, well, you kind of left that part out. But they just said, there's no guarantee and there's just too much risk. And I knew then, like, it just didn't matter to me after that. So I was pregnant with Caden, had the most beautiful pregnancy ever. Delivered him actually without being induced. He's the only one. What a gift from the Lord he really was. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that being said, after he was delivered, it all came back, but almost like tenfold because of everything that was imbalanced. And it was a devastating blow. And it's not that I didn't think it could happen. It's just hard not to have hope that maybe it'll all go away.
Mm.
It was devastating. It was devastating because mm-hmm. it was like grief all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And you grieve, right? You grieve what you know will never be. You grieve the person you were. What's it like to never be in pain? You can barely remember. So to have that moment and to lose it again and then to have to grieve it again. Even just as a mom, I had a lot of mom guilt I had to wrestle through. Carter spent so much time in a hospital. And I just went, you should be at home. And I would listen to other moms talk about like going to Target. This is always the example I give because this was such a big deal to me. Because I couldn't even take Carter to Target by myself. Because if I took him to Target, my pain would be so out of control by the time I got home that I could barely take care of him. So that's not responsible. So I couldn't even go to Target. And all I wanted to do was like walk through the store with my baby. And that sounds so basic and simple, but it was something that I grieved deeply. And when I would spend time with other moms and I would hear them, and this is on me, Val, like that the Lord really worked out in me, is I would hear moms like, I'm not getting sleep. And this is so hard. And I would leave and I would go to my car and I would cry. I would just cry. And I was convicted. So I went, Nikki, their suffering is real. You don't get to corner the market on suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has suffering. And what they're experiencing is real and it's hard. And what you're experiencing is grief.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize the difference and to honor others suffering well was very convicting for me. And to recognize that what I was feeling was just grief. And that was okay. And to just like step into that and lean into that grief and allow the Lord to just heal that. But to know that there's still so much good. There's still so much good that he has for me and that I have.
Yeah.
And then how old was Carter when you and Chad moved into youth ministry then?
Well, we were in youth ministry before Carter was born.
Oh, before he was born. Okay. What? Okay. So before he's born, okay, you're married like 20 minutes after you turn 16. You have this baby. You're in youth ministry.
Yeah.
With teenagers.
Yeah.
Chronic pain.
Yeah.
A young mother.
Mm-hmm.
And wrestling through this faith. So what was mothering your own kids like? Because also, I'm just going to put this assumption out there, and you can tell me if it's way off base, if it's an assumption lots of people have and it's not correct at all. But I'm going to assume that as a youth ministry couple, you become a parent figure to these kids.
Right.
And so you're managing this influence you have over their hearts and their walk with Christ. Mm-hmm. You're managing this household you have. You're managing your marriage. You're managing your chronic pain. What was left at the end of the day, what was left?
You know, I think that is always the risk if you pour yourself out completely, right? And what I will say in this to the Big C Church, the church that we were in, to this day, we have these some of the sweetest relationships. The way they walked with us, the way they were willing to enter into our suffering shaped who we were, shaped our family. I'm talking, I would sometimes even drop Carter off at their homes on my way to the ER to say, hey, Nikki, we know it's 3 a.m. You go ahead and drop that sweet baby off. And there were so many of them. I mean, we're not talking about just one family. We are talking family after family after family that said, we love you. We're here for you. You're not alone. That is, I don't know if there is a more powerful message of Christian community in the way we love others when we rejoice and we suffer with them than what I saw in that church. It is, to this day, it humbles me. And I am so grateful for those people who we are still friends with today. And I have gone back and thanked them for the way that they loved us and they walked with us and supported us. So doing youth ministry was easy. It was easy because they truly were family. And I would show up and they loved our kids and they loved us and they would put a baby in their arms. They would just take Carter and they knew, most of them knew by looking at me. They were, I mean, this, again, I look back and I go, man, you really have to know someone. They would look at me and go, well, it looks like your pain is a little high today. So I'm going to go ahead and take Carter. And I know that you have stuff to do and you're going to do the things. And that's some of that's my personality. So you do the things.
Yeah.
And we're going to do this. And just you tell us how we can help you. And I mean, just by looking at me, Val, they could gauge where my pain was at. Only God.
That's incredible. And so important. And I'm so glad that that was your answer and that you shared that, because it's so important for us to remember, even as a community of moms, we all, like you said, we're all suffering, struggling. We all have our battles. Just to get a little bit of reprieve or understanding is so huge, so huge. And so I kind of don't know where to take this. So I'm just going to awkwardly transition. That's what I'm really good at, is awkward transitions. To when, okay, so you had Cam, he had coded, he had to sleep a certain way, he had to have the monitor, and Haley had to have a monitor, I think for, I don't even remember, I think it was maybe 6 months after she was born. She was born in 2010, and so one of the elders at Salem, where you and Chad were youth ministers at the time, approached me and was like, hey, you know, Nikki's had this, like, little bit of a traumatic thing, and you had a little bit of a traumatic thing, and so maybe you guys can bond over the traumatic things. Which wasn't, I mean, that's not verbatim what he said, but his whole thing was, you know, maybe be one of her people right now. And I think I just walked up to you one Sunday after church, like I caught you, literally caught you, grabbed you, because that's also what I do. I'm really good at grabbing people. It's okay. I know you've been through some stuff, and I just want you to know, if you need someone to pray with you, like, we've been through some stuff, we can talk about it, you can come over at any time. And I honestly don't remember what I said. I'm just kind of imagining that that's how it went. But I remember it was like, it was weird for me, but I also remember you were so sweet about it. And you were like, thank you so much. That means a lot. You don't even know. And then we were talking before this. We have no idea. It went from there. Like, I don't know you at all, but I'm going to grab you in this church hallway and flirt you. Talk to me too. It was just, yeah, Nikki, I've known her forever. Val, I've known her forever.
Well, that is one of your, truly, it is one of your greatest strengths. That's why I always say you're one of my favorite people. To know you is to meet you and talk to you for a few minutes and to feel like I have known you forever. You are instant warmth. You are so kind. You ask such great questions. you don't shy away actually from awkward. You're willing to step into that. Not everybody is, right? Not everybody is. And even just from what you had walked through, and actually I remember as you were talking, I went home and I called Chad and I remember telling him, you will never guess who came up and talked to me.
What?
Nope. True story. I go, Val came up and talked to me. I've never talked to her before because he had more of a relationship with you guys than I did at that point. I do remember that.
Yeah.
And I just said, I just went, she was so kind. She was so warm. And I had just gone through this traumatic event. And you know, I don't fault people. It's hard. It's hard to step into hard situations and you don't know what to say. And you don't even know what went on sometimes, which makes it even harder. But it was so meaningful to me. And I remember calling him and just talking to him about that because it meant so much. Like it was such an endearing, meaningful thing. And truth be told, I was so desperate for friends, you know, from moving there to having a baby. And then all that stuff with Cam, it was that summer after I had Cam that I remember I said, I'm going to be intentional with relationships. I need friends. Like I can't do this by myself. So you initiating that was honestly, Val, really a catalyst.
Well, I so appreciate you saying that. And I also don't know how to respond. So instead of responding, I'm just going to go on to my next question that I wanted to talk about. But thank you. Thank you. So we became really good friends. A lot of fun. We had a lot of fun together. I do remember this has nothing to do with your motherhood, really. But I feel like what we have been talking about tonight, I hope this encourages someone out there because it was a women's retreat and I was emceeing at the retreat, which I love doing. Also, I just want to plug for anybody out there listening, Nikki is a wonderful speaker. If you need a speaker for your women's events, she's a wonderful speaker. I have her contact information. I can hook you up.
Okay, but let's actually go one step further and say, if you put Nikki and Val in the same room, we're a dynamic duo friends. Yes. And they've done that, a dynamic duo.
Done it. Yes. That was a lot of fun also. So I was emceeing this retreat and I just, small talk just is not my thing. And maybe that's why I just approach it with warmth and intentionality from the beginning, because I just, small talk makes me feel funny. Yeah. And so I had finished eating and I threw my plate away and I was just kind of like standing in a circle because other people were eating and talking and I'm not one to just, you know, belly up to a conversation in place or whatever. And I was standing at the trash can, just kind of turning in circles, like, where do I go? I don't know what to do. And I saw you. And you were eating and I felt the Lord impress upon my heart, you need to pray for her. And I was like, okay. But I kept spinning around looking for somewhere to go, looking for someone to be like, over here, Val. Didn't happen. I spun around a second time and saw you again. And the Lord was like, go pray for Nikki. And so you were eating and talking to who I don't even know who was across the table from you. They probably know because
they're like, what? Listen, like, that was me. I remember she grabbed her head.
Because I walked up to you as you're eating and again, grabbed you. I put my arm around you and put it up behind you and put it like behind your head and grabbed your arm and just started praying for you. And it was, I don't know, maybe a couple months later when we were eating at Applebee's and you sat next to me and you smacked me. You're like, I have to tell you. And you told me that you were getting ready to leave because you felt a headache coming on. You knew it was going to be unbearable. You weren't going to be able to drive home. And when I walked up and prayed for you for the first time, that headache left you, completely left you. I didn't even pray for your headache because I didn't know you had one. Mm-hmm. Just in obedience, went and prayed for you right then because the Lord was nudging me to do it. And what a lesson for me in following that voice of the Spirit.
Amen.
And being able to know later. I didn't even know at the time. And then because after I was done, I just walked away. I didn't talk to you and be like, hey, sorry, the Lord told me to come over here and pray for you while absolutely I was spinning not in circles. I just walked away. You were like, oh, there she goes. Okay, bye.
100%. That is that exactly how it went down.
But what a testament to, and I love that you shared it with me later because I was like, oh my goodness,
to see fruit from obedience. A lot of the times we obey and we don't know what comes of it or why or whatever, but to see fruit from it was such an encouragement for me. So I hope that encourages someone else today.
You know, Val,
it
even points to just the beauty of community, but community with moms.
The importance
of being in that community and being vulnerable enough to be in that space. It was all women.
Yes.
A lot of them moms. And to be vulnerable with each other. I mean, the fact that even you felt comfortable coming up and doing that, maybe you didn't totally feel comfortable.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't say comfortable.
You know, and even to show up at a retreat, any type of women's retreat, is not a small thing. It's hard.
Yeah.
I even struggled with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, the importance of being in community, I just can't stress it enough.
Yeah. And that brings up a good point because I want to encourage you in this. And even though, like, I understood you had chronic pain for so long and you had so many commitments, your own family, the youth ministry, other engagements. I mean, like, there was a lot going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And no matter what, your faith was always front of mind. If someone had a struggle, you went over and prayed with them. If you were offering a word of encouragement at every turn. And when you offer that to other people, it makes them feel like, you know, I'm not saying this to make you heroic or anything, just in you modeling this. It makes it be like, okay, I know what she's going through and she's still taking effort to build me up, to edify me, to encourage me in this. Like, I can do that too, maybe. And so how has your family, how have your kids learned from you and Chad about how to minister to others, regardless of what's going on in their own circle?
That's good. You know, one of the things that I saw and I have said, I really feel the Lord has revealed along the way that has been very redeeming for me is my kids and their compassion and empathy towards others. And one of the things, those who suffer any kind of suffering, it's almost a prereq to having compassion for others when you know, when you can honestly say, I could put myself in that suffering seat of some kind.
Mm.
And one of the things I noticed when Carter was very small and that I went, Lord, I see what you can do with this. He was 2 years old. We went and saw Chad's grandma who was in the nursing home. Most 2 year olds are like, right? And Carter, because he was used to being around his mom who had headaches and some issues in bed, and there would be times that I would put him in bed and I would have tears streaming down my face. Like I couldn't even not.
Mm.
And one of the times he was 2 and I would always rock him. And he looked at me and he said, Mommy, walk you. And he patted his little lap and he put my head in his lap and he rocked me back. Oh. And I was like, oh, sweet Lord, you are so good. Look what you are doing in this little boy's heart. So when we got to see his grandma, most little tiny humans are running around. I'll never forget, he was running around and then he saw her and he stopped and he walked up and he put his hand on hers and he started rubbing her arm. And honestly, Val, I went, Lord, you are so good. You are so good. Because I know exactly what you're going to do in the hearts of my kids.
Mm.
And that is a thread. There's something about seeing a parent suffer for a child.
Yeah.
When they can't get out of bed, literally can't get out of bed, when they're crying because they can't not.
Mm.
That the Lord does a good work in their heart. And one of the things we would say to our kids is when there's a fire, meaning when you see something, someone suffering at school, when you see someone not having a friend, when you see a fire, we would say, We don't run away from the fire, we run into it. And if all you can do is go sit by them and you don't know what to say, it's okay. Just sit by them. Run into the fire. And the Lord has been so faithful. I'll share one just a year ago of my youngest. He's in fifth grade. And a mom approached me at church. She said, Nikki, I just wanted to tell you that my son was being bullied. And he didn't want to go to school. And he's having a really hard time. She said, I want you to know your son came and sat next to him at the lunch table. And if anybody would say anything to him, he would say, that is so mean. We don't talk to people that way. You need to leave him alone. And she said, Nikki, like he did it over and over and over. And she said, this other kid even would go after him. She said, like Cam put himself at risk knowing this kid would come after him, and he did it anyway. And about, I don't say that. Like my mom always had a saying, and she would say, people would be like, oh, your kids, we love your kids. And she would say, my kids are who they are in spite of me. It's God's grace. And I will say that about my own kids. I have not always walked suffering well. I have had sometimes a short fuse because I am overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And in spite of me, the Lord has been so good and done a good work in their hearts and have made them very compassionate, empathetic. They usually will see suffering faster than most people because they're so in tune with what that looks like and what hurting looks like. And it doesn't deter them. They're not scared of it. They're comfortable walking into it. And it's not a small thing. And
no, but
me, it's redemptive.
And absolutely redemptive. And what a full circle. From the day you walked into the Mayo Clinic and they used the word firestorm had been unleashed in your body.
That's good.
All of this other stuff hits the fan, never been dealt with by you before, to telling you, be glad you have this one. Because that's it. To having your Fab Five. And raising them up to walk to the fire.
Yeah.
That's nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. And that's just the proof in the pudding. I love that so much. So I guess before we wrap up here, which I feel like is a shame that we have to, but what would you say to the mom who feels like everything that can go wrong has gone wrong? She doesn't know if she can take one more disappointment, setback, diagnosis, whatever the case may be. What would you say to her to encourage her today?
You know, a quote by Elizabeth Elliot that I love. The deepest things that I've learned in my own life have come from the deepest suffering, and out of the deepest waters and the hottest fires have come the deepest things that I know about God. Don't miss what God has for you that is going to come out of your deepest suffering. I would say immerse yourself in scripture, immerse yourself in the word, hold fast. Surround yourself with community. I think it's easy to sometimes to turn inward and to want to like pull away when we're suffering.
For sure.
But instead to lean in and allow other people to enter into your suffering so you don't feel alone, so you don't feel like the walls are caving in. I would say lean into the community. I mean, the church isn't our idea. That is God's. Like, it's his best for us. Lean in to that. And I think one of my favorite verses that carried me through this is the God of all comfort who comforts us so that we can go and comfort others. And
yeah,
don't miss that. Don't miss the comfort that he has for you.
Yeah, that's so good. And I will tack on to that this story because he's a God of redemption as well. And along with not being very good at small talk and it making me feel uncomfortable, I also hate shopping. And therefore, the clothes that I wear
have been a part of me for many, many years. And Nikki is a fantastic shopper. She finds lots, not only deals and bargains, but really cute things.
I have 500 kids. I have to know how to find a bargain.
And so I say this to say, like, first of all, in your life, you need to find a friend who can showcase their strengths in your weaknesses. First of all, find that friend. And the Lord redeemed, because let me tell you a story where I sat on a bench in a Kohl's dressing room while Nikki went from one day not being able to walk with her baby in Target to another day running laps around Kohl's and throwing things over the dressing room door. Try this. And let me tell you, such a blessing in so many ways.
So much fun. Trust me, hang with Val. You'll be laughing the whole time. Just hang with Val.
Unless she's trying on clothes. And then it was like, I need a water break. I need, like, it's getting sweaty in here. It's too hot. Oh, man. Well, I'm just so grateful that we were finally able to connect and to record this episode. I know it will encourage everyone who is listening to it. And I love you dearly, friend.
Love you so much.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the Motherhood Experience Podcast. To join our exclusive TME community, head on over to themotherhoodexperience.com/learn more. Be sure to follow The Motherhood Experience on Facebook and Instagram, and please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment below, and we'll catch you next time.